Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Michael Shackelford, whose website, wizardofodds.com, was just sold for more than $2 million. We'll be talking to Michael shortly, primarily about what led to him being a millionaire right now. Just in the news, there was a gambler in Pennsylvania who was playing Ultimate Texas Hold'em. There's an optional trips bet the player could make but didn't. Once the player looked at his cards, though, he discovered he qualified for a 20-to-1 return on the trips bet if he had bet that, so he casually slipped a red chip into the square for the optional bet. The casino paid him $100. Later, the casino discovered its error and demanded the $100 back. The player admitted his shady move and gave back the $100. He was then arrested and charged with fraud. So far, he's had to post $5,000 bail, and there's no telling what the fine will be during the trial. Richard, do you think this is appropriate for the casino to press charges here?
Would I press charges? Probably not. It's if I owned a casino, it's one of those things that would have a lot to do with intent. I mean, if the guy was you know, clearly a sleazebag, it was just, you know, past posting, well, then I think you do have to make an example of people to let them know that, you know, cheating is illegal. On the other hand, too often the casinos punish somebody who shouldn't really be punished because they made a mistake or they didn't realize or whatever. But, if it's clear the guy was past posting the bet, then, yeah, I would probably have him arrested. Whether I would follow up on it, well, it's not the casino's point. Job at that point, right? Then it's up to the DA to decide whether they press charges or not.
Maybe. Michael, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I'm absolutely on the side of the Mohegan Sun. The way I understand the case, the player was deliberately past posting. That's an obvious cheating move. I'm all in favor of ethical and honest gambling. And if I ran the Mohegan Sun, I'd press full charges against the guy.
My take is a little bit different than both of those, although closer to Richard's. It has to do with history. I think if the player had done this before, you hang him up by the short curlies. If he had never done this before, on the first time on a $100 bet, you give him a warning. But if there's any history of him doing this in the past, string him up. So,
actually, you bring up a good point, Bob. I mean, if you look at the guy's history and you see he's a degenerate and losing, you know, thousands of dollars a year in your casino, you probably want to keep him as a customer, but let him, you know, but make it clear that you're not going to tolerate it.
Yeah, that's actually a different point that I was making. You know, if he's a huge enough loser, you just let him keep the $100. Keep going.
Yeah.
But good. Interesting. All three of us have a different take on this. All right. In Atlantic City, we've been following this bet where $1.5 million was made by players playing Baccarat. They were using Jamaco pre-shuffled cards, and the results of the current shoe were exactly the same as they were in the last shoe. The players noticed this pattern, started betting $5,000 a hand, and so for the 2.5 hours the casino put up with this, the casino was out $1.5 million. Some of it paid, some of it not paid. Afterwards, players allegedly roughed up, etc. There's been a couple of different court decisions. The first time the court ruled in favor of the players, and the Golden Nugget said, yeah, we'll let the players keep the money, and we're not going to appeal this. However, they got to agree to drop charges against us because there were some charges on the players being roughed up. The players said, no, we'll take our chances. So they went to court the second time, and the same judge came down and said, now the players have to give all the $101.5 million back. And so now both sides appealed that one. And so now the Court of Appeals has said the game was fair. And which takes the framework out of the Golden Nuggets case. And so probably it means it's over and the players will be paid.
Although if I'm a player, I'm still planning to sue for the handcuffing and the back rooming and, you know, some of them, I guess, spent hours being detained.
Yeah. So apparently it's not completely over, but it's going the way of the players.
As it should.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely think that's the right decision. And I hope the players get something more for being illegally detained.
All right. Then this has been boring. We're all three on the same side on this one. Let's talk to our guest, Michael Shackelford. He's been a frequent guest on the show and was actually a co-host for the show for more than a year. Michael Shackelford, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Now, why don't you take 5 to 10 minutes to explain how your website, thewizardofodds.com, came to be sold for $2.35 million?
Well, it's a long story, and it's a great American success story. The whole thing started in 1997 when I started the website completely as a hobby to teach myself website design, which I was supposed to learn for my job anyway, and I was analyzing games as I was learning new computer languages. You know, previously my main language was Pascal, and my boss wanted me to start writing code in C++. So I, again, as a learning activity, I started analyzing casino games in C++. And as long as I did all this analysis, I thought, well, maybe I'll make a website for it and try to teach the world how to gamble better. Because back in 1997, the number of decent websites about the whole gamut of casino games was zero. So I made my website, thought nobody would ever see it, never spent a dollar on advertising. But, you know, somehow people found it, and I got a lot of email, people asking me to add new games and address rule variants and that I didn't know about. And people also approached me, game inventors, saying, you know, I'm looking for a mathematician to help with the odds of this game I invented. And the first 2.5 years of the site, it was completely nonprofit. I never made a dime on advertising. But then I started to introduce advertising on it and made a little money on the side that way. And there was no shortage of work as a mathematician. There, at the time, you know, there was a real need in the market for gaming mathematicians. So I had plenty of work there. And between my regular job and keeping up with my website and doing consulting work, I was just very busy. And in the year 2000, I came to the conclusion that if I quit my full-time job, which was for the federal government, and devoted myself full-time to my website and consulting work, I would make about twice as much money. And so...
And did the Mrs. Wizard like this decision?
No.
Really? Even though it was going to be earned twice as much?
Well, she wasn't necessarily convinced with that. And other than me, have you ever heard of anyone leaving a government job voluntarily for a reason other than retirement? I haven't.
Do you call being impeached voluntarily?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she was not enthusiastic with the idea of leaving a comfortable and pretty well-paying government job for those who know the federal government salary system, I was a high GS-14 and pretty close to making 15. And so, yeah, this took months of talking Mrs. Wizard into, but she finally caved in and let me quit, which I did. And I did as I said I would. I concentrated on consulting work and trying to get more money out of my website, which I did for another year, still living in Baltimore. And then I had to nag Mrs. Wizard again, saying, you know, being in the gaming business, just Baltimore is just very inconvenient. And, you know, I'm originally from Southern California anyway. So I pressed her to move to Nevada. And being that this is the mecca of gambling, and I wanted to move back out west anyway, and houses are cheap here and no state income tax. And again, after months of lobbying her, she agreed to that too. So I owe her two favors. So in early 2001, we moved out here, and I continued, you know, with the website and with consulting work, and the, you know, the advertising on the website kept getting better and better, and I was making more and more money. As you probably know, I started an exclusive advertising deal with Bodog, and that worked out quite well for a number of years. But all good things must come to an end. And about a year and a half ago, advertising revenue started to decline with Bodog. And it kept declining and declining and declining. And I could be partially blamed for some of this. Maybe I could have promoted them better. But I also think that, you know, there were not enough new eyeballs seeing this advertising. And it was just tough to capture new players to them. So after they just kept cutting and cutting what they were paying me, and justifiably so.
Can I stop you there for a second,
sure.
Michael? Do you think this speaks to the internet gaming in the United States? Because clearly it dropped off after 2006, right, with the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act. But since then, do you think it's been declining, or is it just that so many of your eyeballs are returned customers, and you basically, if they had signed up for Bodog, they've already done it, or Bovada?
Yeah, I think it's the same eyeballs seeing the site over and over. Yes, there is always some fresh traffic, but I have a very loyal following. And again, it's much of my traffic, I think, is repeat business. And these people either already had a Bodog or Bovada account, or they just were never going to get one. And about Black Friday, I still am not sure whether that helped me, hurt me, or was neutral. Because after Black Friday, a lot of American affiliates got scared out and would not take ads for any internet casinos at all, or none that accepted U.S. players. But I took my chances and continued to sell ads to internet casinos, thinking that this is my First Amendment right, and the law never specifically said Americans cannot gamble on the internet. It never said you cannot sell ads for internet casinos. It only says that banks can't process transactions to and from internet casinos, which I have never done. So so after Black Friday, you know, advertising revenue didn't suddenly increase nor decrease.
Mm.
So, all right. So, yeah, getting to the rags part of my rags to riches to rags story. Effective August 1st, Bodog...
This year.
Yes.
So 2 months ago almost.
Yes, Bodog / Bovada was no longer the exclusive advertiser. And I thought, if I give my readers some choices of places to play and explain why I recommend each one, suddenly my players may sign up for new accounts. And did they? Absolutely not. It was a abject disaster. The advertising revenue for August was just awful. And am I partially to blame? Absolutely. I mean, you can look at the website right now, and there is nothing that's really calling you to sign up for an account and play anywhere. It's just a bunch of cold banners. And I learned a little too late that in 2014, this is just not how you sell ads on the internet anymore. Banners are frankly dead, and you need to... There's other trickier ways to get business, and it's through merging content and advertising. So meanwhile, through the bad days, I had been living off money that I had saved during the good days, and I was getting, I was running kind of low, and I knew that I only had a few months left before I would have to start selling assets to keep to pay the mortgage and pay my bills. So, knowing that I am just a lousy salesman, and I approached some people that I knew about, would you like to take over the advertising of my websites in exchange for a percentage of the revenue? And a number of people were enthusiastic to do this because my website gets great traffic and it does extremely well with search engines. There was a lot of negotiations with various different parties to do this. But through it all, not to say anything bad about any of them, but none of them I really knew very well. And having had some bad relationships before, I didn't really feel comfortable with it. And I had a pretty good offer to just sell my websites outright and continue to work for the new owner. And at first, I didn't take this offer very seriously because I wanted to keep my baby. But more and more, as I looked at various bad options, I thought that selling the sites outright and just working for the new owner, who I feel very comfortable with, would be the best option to keep the site alive and financially well, and it provides financial security for me, and it would help me sleep better at night that I'm, no longer... selling ads for internet casinos myself. And another thing to legitimately worry about is Google can suddenly decide they don't like you anymore, and suddenly my great search engine placements could turn awful overnight.
No, that's his problem.
Yes, that is now somebody else's problem. That is the story.
One thing I don't quite understand is, when someone buys a business, it's usually based on the revenue.
It is.
And so if the revenue had declined so much, the valuation just seems really high to me.
Right. And it's in this case, it's obvious that the buyer did not buy for the revenue stream, which was awful at the time that he bought it. I could have just brought Bovada back, and it might have been okay, but it still would not have justified anywhere near what he paid. He bought the website for its reputation, its traffic, and the content of it. I mean, my odd site is 17 years old, and if I may toot my own horn, the content of it is just gold. I mean, I don't think that there's any website that compares to it in terms of addressing the whole gamut of casino gambling, including hundreds of obscure games. And I think that he can milk the odd site for a lot of money. It's just a matter of putting in a little bit of time into it and to convert the great traffic that it gets.
Now, you had... Part of the story, which you haven't revealed yet tonight, is you had a lot of money in a European bank that decided to go collapse. And so why would you have money in a European bank, and what happened there?
Yes. As mentioned before, Black Friday said that American banks could not fund transactions with internet casinos. And so because of that, Bodog/Bovada had a very difficult time paying me, and they work with payment processors that just do not want to touch American banks, and American banks don't want to touch them. So Bovada basically said, Mike, we want to pay you. We owe you this money. Where should we send it to? And for a while, I sent it to friends, and I let them keep a little bit, and then they transferred it to me. But all of them said, Mike, I don't want to do this all the time. And so I really needed my own foreign bank account. And it's very difficult for Americans to get one if you don't have a lot of money. And a lot of money basically means about $1 million to get one out of, say, Switzerland or Hong Kong or Singapore. When I went to Panama, a trip that I mentioned on a previous show, that was for the purpose of opening a bank account. And I was unsuccessful at opening one there, but I met somebody there who said that he had connections with the banks in Cyprus. And so I said, fine, you know, Cyprus is in the European Union. Sounds rock solid to me. So I filled out all the paperwork with the Laiki Bank in Cyprus, and things were great for a couple of years. The money came in, the money went out. And by the way, I fully declared this bank account to the U.S. government. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to me, they were loaning lots of money to Greece. They bought lots of Greek bonds and Greek debt, and I had no idea. I didn't even know that Greece was in such trouble. But one day when I turned on the news, the first story was there was a run on the banks in Cyprus, and I thought, oh my God. And I immediately went to my computer to log on to my account, and I just got some message that that they were experiencing too much traffic, and I couldn't get on at all.
Doesn't sound like a good sign.
No, but I searched other websites about it, and it looked just awful that there indeed was a run in the bank, and the people in the know had already took all their money out, and so it was the people that were not in the know, like me, that were now standing in line trying to get their money. But to try to make a long story short, the government of Cyprus had to step in, and they tried to work out a deal with the European Union, begging them to bail them out as they bailed out other southern European banks. And they said this time no, and a lot of their bank account holders were in Russia, and they begged the government of Russia to save the bank, and they said no. It's just too unhealthy. We don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. But there were still some assets in the bank. And I, of course, was in the most unhealthy bank in Cyprus. And what they said is, okay, we have enough to pay everyone the first 100,000 euros in their account. But with the Laiki Bank that I was in, the most unhealthy bank, they said that 100,000 is it. Whether you have 101,000 euros or 100 million euros, you're only getting 100,000. So I don't want to say how much I lost, but the 100,000 euros I did get to keep, it took a long time to get it out because they basically put me on an allowance and I could only take out so much at a time. That definitely plays a factor into my riches to rags story.
Also along the way, shortly before you had this big payday of $2.35 million, you appealed to the people who frequent your site and said, folks, I'm almost broke. I need your help. Can you donate some money to your favorite wizard? And some did. And then a couple weeks later, you had this big payday, which looks kind of not so cool. So how much did you collect, and what's the status of that? Are you giving it back? Are you keeping it? What's going on?
First of all, that wasn't quite how I wanted to characterize it.
Okay.
I didn't want to beg for money because I was nearly on the streets. No, you know, I still had a lot of assets in real estate and IRAs, but things that I didn't want to touch. But I definitely never said that, you know, I'm close to being destitute. But I was definitely having a lot of financial anxiety because, like I said, my liquid assets were being spent fast and were going to hit zero in maybe 3 months. And by the way, I have three kids in the Meadows School, which is not cheap. And so I have a pretty big monthly spend. So the way I tried to put it, and the way I would like to say that I did put it, is this website has helped a lot of people out there. And people thank me for the website all the time. And often I have been asked, can I make a donation to the website? And for years I said, you know, no thanks. I'm getting enough money from advertising. But I appreciate the gesture.
People never say that about my website. How about you, Bob?
Well, the next time it happens will be the first.
Well, I think the audience should give you guys some money if they're getting good advice from your websites.
You're a wonderful guest, Michael. We're going to have you on again shortly.
Well, you guys should think about that. You know, right. If you guys have benefited from Bob or Richard's free information.
No. This is not a solicitation. I was making a joke.
All right. So please, how much did you get?
All right. But well, I just want to clarify that the way I was trying to put it was, if my website has been helpful to you, think about it like church and give 10% of whatever you think that you've saved in the casinos or less money that you've lost. Please consider giving me a tithe. And if you think 10% is too much, I'll take anything. So that was the message I was trying to make, but it may have been confused a little bit because I was also kind of singing the blues about money at the same time. So I basically threw out my tin cup in early August, and then yes, as you said, a month later, here I am hitting the jackpot, and it definitely didn't look good to some people, and there was a huge stink about it on my forum, and a lot of people took my side, but a lot of people were just livid about it and throwing stones at me. So what I decided to do, and this is my policy, is I collected about $5,000 in donations. Anybody who explicitly says, Mike, that money was a non-conditional gift, I want you to keep it because your websites have helped me a lot, I accept that and thank you and I'll keep the money. Anybody who says I want my donation back, I will, and I have given it back, and I've already returned quite a few. But anybody who I just don't hear from at all, I'm going to donate that money to charity. So I tend to think that's going to be about $3,000 to $4,000, and I plan to write the check on Monday or Tuesday. I'm going to give people a little more time to say, Wizard, I want my donation back. Yeah, after that grace period, I'm giving the rest of it to charity, which should be about, so between the charity donations and direct returns to donators, that should, I will be giving back about 80% of the money. And I hope that satisfies everybody, but it still hasn't. And by the way, there's just been a rash of suspensions and bans on my website, and there's just been a lot of people have done nothing but complain about it, and not just on my website, but others too, I hear.
Mm. So we got an email when I had said you were going to be on the show, asking if you're still going to have sort of say over the editorial content of your site. Will you be in charge of what gets put on there? I'm not talking about the advertising. I'm talking about the content.
Absolutely. Is the guy who bought the site loves the site, and he understands that it's very branded around me. So he wants to keep me actively creating new content on the site and addressing the old content, making sure it's correct, and changing the thrust of the website. Not at all. To basically keep it the same, but just market it better. So far, I've been able to do whatever I wish and write about whatever I want. He has said justifiably so, Mike, I want you to write more about iGaming or internet gambling, which I will. And as we speak, I am rewriting a review of real-time gaming software. I'm going to be writing more online casino reviews, but that's certainly not going to be all my time. I'm certainly going to keep up with land-based casinos and keep it as unchanged as possible.
Now, also, the major concern, I think, from our writer was you have always been sort of strictly objective, the math of the game. You have no plans of getting into the advantage play side of anything, right?
Well, I would like to think that I touch on advantage play sometimes. For example, I have a lively thread going about half-point parlay cards on my Wizard of Vegas site, and in my page on sports betting, I address certain places where advantages can be found. But do I emphasize that material? No. I try to make the reader work for it a little bit and find it himself. Another reason I do that is I don't want to blare it too loudly, lest it ruin some of these good plays. So, yeah, no, but my focus has always been on the recreational player and to try to help the casual player lose less money.
Yeah. Now, also, you've over the last few months, you've been partnering with the POG, but I assume because the buyer is kind of in the same business as the POG, that that'll be stopping?
Yeah, that stopped already. The POG is a great website. And not to say that the new owner's website, which is latestcasinobonuses.com, isn't a great site too, but the POG does a great job as a consumer advocate and warning the world about casinos that are reputable and not reputable. Not that the new owner doesn't as well, but I really like the POG, but the new owner felt that the POG was a competitor, and he wanted the casino reviews to point back to his own website, latestcasinobonuses, rather than the POG.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense, and he's paying a lot of money for that privilege.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely, and he's absolutely entitled to that, and the POG was pretty unhappy about this deal, but, you know, that's just business sometimes.
You gave him the chance to put up $2.4 million if they wanted a difference.
Sure,
you?
Sure, right, right. But, yeah, he was in no financial position to come over that offer.
All right, so I think we've talked about the website, and let's move on to something else that was very informative.
Thanks.
You mentioned half-point parlay cards. I think you talked about it last time you were on this show. Are you still doing half-point parlay cards? Are they a good deal? Can our listeners get in on this?
Absolutely. These are on a percentage basis, these are a great play. And I won't teach a whole course on it right now. But a half-point parlay card is a parlay card where every point spread ends in a half. And so if you take a team that's a dead-on three-point spread, they're either going to have to move that spread to plus 3.5 or plus 2.5. So if they move it to plus 3.5, you're getting that extra half point off three, which is great. Or if they move it to 2.5, then you take the favorite and lay the 2.5. So you look for these extra half points off key numbers wherever you can. And lots of times, you only see it off 3 and 7, maybe 3 or 4 games. So then you have to fill up the card with other ones that may be a half point off of 10 or off of 4 or off of 1. But you basically, you take the half points wherever you can find them and preferably off the best numbers possible. And so you're getting about maybe an average of a 53% chance of winning any given leg of these things. So if you combine this with getting the good payoffs, which can be found at the William Hill sportsbooks or the South Point sportsbooks, and in some cases, some places like the Boyd casinos and Treasure Island have a good five-leg card. In my opinion, the average advantage is about 10%. The problem is getting a lot of money down. That can be difficult. Last week at the Rampart and the Suncoast, they limited me to 4 cards each today, just hours ago, the Treasure Island limited me to 3. But I got quite a few in at the William Hill franchise at SLS. So these are a great play, and I write about it, all about it, on my website. And yeah, by the way, since I was on the last show about that, I've just been doing great with them. And I must admit, I've had more than my share of luck with them, but I'm enjoying doing it, and I'm enjoying winning money on them.
All right. So your last show had more of a hands-on approach as to how to do this. So if you look in the archives for when he was visiting here before, you'll get a little bit more information on this. Now, would it be illegal? Now, you say Treasure Island limits you to 3 cards, maybe. But they don't know me. And me to take your picks and go in there. Would they give me 5 or 10 or 15? And is this illegal to do?
I think that using someone else to bet for you is technically illegal in Nevada, but it's one of these things that no one ever actually gets prosecuted for, because how can you prove it? And people use runners or beards for sports betting purposes all the time. Do I have any beards on my payroll? No. But sometimes I will ask a friend if I am with them anyway and putting cards in to put in a few for me. And I think that you could get just as many in as me. I think that at most places I'm not recognized yet. Maybe at the Rampart I am, but
so they weren't restricting you because you were doing so well. They just were restricting everybody.
Right. The way these things work is you hand them the cards and they run it through the machine, and often it will say approval required. And this is not something you like to see, because the computer already figured out that this guy is making all the hot picks, but it's saying, let's get a human being to make a final decision. But when it says that, you know, the supervisor will already know that it's been flagged, and lots of times they will just look at the whole stack of them and say, oh, we'll give you these 3 you already bet, but no more. Lots of times the decision is made somewhere else. For example, the South Point makes the decision on these things for a whole host of casinos. And likewise with the Suncoast, I think the decision there is made either at the Gold Coast or the Orleans. So lots of times when I'm putting these things in, I'm waiting a long time for each one to get approved. And then after 3 or 4, the phone rings. And right after that, I know I'm not getting any more, because I know exactly that they're saying, someone from the South Point or the Orleans is saying, no more to this guy.
And what is the max bet per card?
It depends on the place, but I think some places it's up to $300 or $500. Personally, oh. I like to put them in for just 50 each. But I think the way to go is, if you have a lot of money to bet, is don't bet a lot of cards. Just bet, say, 4 of them, but bet them for the maximum amount. But that's only if you have a lot of money, because these things, like a 5-teamer pays 25, a 6-teamer pays 50, and a 7-teamer pays 100 at the good properties. So these are a big long shot.
All right. Now, back when you were a host on this show, there was a man named Jason Bean, who was a guest 2 times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Jason helped set the lines for some of the sports book. Tell us about Jason.
Yeah, Jason was a good buddy of mine. He knew sports better than anybody I've ever met. You could ask him, you know, to name the whole roster of any team, and he could probably do it. He knew sports to such, you know, an amazing detail, and it was almost impossible to stump him on a sports trivia question, even on obscure sports. And whenever we played Trivia Pursuit, we changed the rules to where you could pick your category. I would always pick science or geography, but he 100% of the time picked sports, and he almost always got these Trivia Pursuit questions right. So I was extremely impressed with his knowledge of sports. We played a lot of golf together, a lot of dinners together. And, you know, I always lived close by. Whenever we went on vacation, he took care of my dog. His personality was just a fun, easygoing guy to be around. He loved gambling. But sad to say, he had been struggling with cancer for the last 5 years or so. He came down with brain cancer. I don't know exactly when, but it was about 5 years ago, and underwent surgery, and they felt that they got it. But a couple years later, it came back, and he underwent surgery again. And again, they said, "Seems like we got it all. You're good to go." And through this time, most of this time, by the way, he worked for Leroy's as a handicapper, and he did tons of his own gambling on the side. He just wasn't supposed to bet at Leroy's properties, but he got promoted to the when Leroy's went out of business. He found his way to being a supervisor at the Golden Nugget, and he knew that job very well. And but anyway, his cancer came back a third time, and sad to say, the third time it just came back too strong, and he went to the best doctors in LA, but it was just more than medical science could deal with. And sadly to say, he lost the battle against cancer, and he passed away in June. So, I just wanted to take a moment to remember Jason.
Yeah, I like Jason. We had, after the show, we would go out and have a snack with the Michael, Jason, and me, as well we did with a few other co-hosts, a few other guests as well. But with when Michael and Jason were there, there was always betting going on. We'd go to some restaurant where we didn't know who the waitress was, and we would try to find a bet where we disagreed. Would the waitress know the capital of Nevada? And so one of us would say yes, and one would say no, and so we would bet the size of the check on whether or not, and there were just a slew of these. And if we agreed that she would know, well, then that we pick something else. Or if we agreed she shouldn't know. So we did it with a couple of guests, but with Jason, we did it more than any of the others.
Yeah, Jason was just a gambler, and we would gamble on anything. And one bet I remember in particular is after a poker game, I don't even know how this came up, but we were playing backgammon, and somehow it came up with, if I let Jason throw all the backgammon pieces in the pool, that I could get them all out within 1 minute. And I'm a pretty good swimmer, so that's why I felt pretty confident in the bet. So he took that bet, and so did another guy. And
put them in each of the corners. And
well, you know, I knew this was in like February, and the pool was cold, and I knew they weren't going to get into the pool and try to hide them, or at least that's what I thought. So they made me go into the house so I couldn't see where they were placing these 30 backgammon chips. And by the way, 15 were blue and 15 were white. So the blue ones were obviously going to be easy to find. And I was allowed to wear goggles. So they said, "Okay, Mike, you ready?" And they started the clock. And I found 14 of them in plenty of time to spare. But I wasn't even counting them. But I felt that I found them all, but I was still just scouring the pool looking for these pieces. And then the minute was over, and we counted the chips, and there were all 15 blue ones and 14 white ones.
Loser.
And, right? You know, I lost, and I said, "Where in the hell is that 15th chip?" And they hit it on one of those steps, like, you know, in Fast Times at Ridgemont High when what's her name with the red bathing suit?
Phoebe Snow.
Yes.
Phoebe Cates. Phoebe Cates.
Yes. What was her character's name on the show?
That I don't remember.
Anyway, who can forget that scene? But anyway, you remember how she kind of walked up vertically out of, you know, those steps in the deep end? They hid one of the white chips. I guess they must have reached down and hid it in that step. And that was the one I couldn't find.
All right.
But that's the kind of trick that Jason was known to play.
Sneaky guy. All right, let's do some commercials, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what we're going to be doing next week with the same cast of characters. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. In September, every night at 8:15, they're drawing a total of 16 names, one of whom receives $10,000 and the other 15 get $500. The first name that is there within 4 minutes collects that $10,000. If that person is not there, it goes on the list of the 15 who get $500, and these folks have 24 hours to collect their money or the money is forfeited. At video poker, $1 coin in earns you one entry. At slots, $1 coin in equals three entries, maximum of 10,000 entries per day. Every night, empty the barrel at 9 p.m., and you can start earning tickets for tomorrow night's drawing. I wrote an article on bobdancer.com, and I calculated this gives you a 0.25%, assuming you're not going to be at the drawings and just after the $500. I now believe that that estimate was low. It's significantly more than that. Today's the 25th day, so there's been 24 days drawn so far. I'm playing 10,000 points on my card and Bonnie's card every day. I have been called three times. She has been called four times. And we're playing an even game to start with. So it is a nice promotion. It ends next. I guess it's Tuesday, where Monday and Tuesday will be better odds than Friday and Saturday, because Friday and Saturday there'll be more people in there. This next Wednesday's free video poker class is 9-6 Jacks or Better Multi-Strike. This is a four-line game where you pay for all four lines at once, but you only play the higher lines if you win on the lower lines. To make up for the fact that you don't play all the higher lines, all wins on the second line are multiplied by 2, wins on the third line multiplied by 4, wins on the top line multiplied by 8. The different strategies required for each line. It is the highest returning game at the South Point. The class is held in the Grandview Lounge, begins at noon, goes on to about 4 o'clock. Everyone, at least 21, is welcome. At the Palms, ending tomorrow night, they're having drawings every Friday night. 10 winners share $10,000 each Friday. You earn 5 times entries on Friday and Saturday, 8 to midnight, 2 times entries all day Sunday and Tuesday. You do not have to be present for the drawing to win, but you need to claim your prize before midnight. Any player who enters the Friday drawing prior to 6:45, on Saturday they receive $10 free play. The deal in October is going to be similar, except the drawings are going to be held on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. They're still giving away $10,000 a week with a similar structure, but it's going to be Saturday instead of Friday. Play for points, Monday through Friday. Until tomorrow, the prizes are Chevron gas card up to a maximum of $200 per day. Cards are earned at a rate of 0.25% video poker, 2% for slots. Beginning Monday, for just 1 week only, you play for free play, which basically means double points for video poker, and I guess it's 9 times points for slots. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these games are the best returning games in the casino, and you need a place to practice. Their weekly game this week is Ultimate X. This is a 10 coin per line game where you earn multipliers on this hand for your play next hand. It is a highly volatile game and is addictively fun. All right. Next week in Las Vegas is G2E. G2E stands for Global Gaming Expo. It is the biggest trade show for casinos in the world. It happens every fall here in Vegas, and you will have people advertising new games, casino uniforms, surveillance equipment, tables, the advertising agencies, if it has anything to do with casinos, there'll be somebody there, and it's big. So I usually look at the video poker games, and so next Thursday night I'm going to be talking about the video poker games that I like the best. Michael and Richard are both going to be there looking at different sorts of games. Richard, what kind of games are you going to be looking at?
Well, I'm always usually most interested in the table games, although, I have to say over the years, it's become less and less interesting to me. I'm there usually looking at both the new table games, which often never turn up. They are never seen again. And I'm also always interested in what's new at Shuffle Master and what's new in Surveillance. It's always fun to go by the Biometrica booth and look up my friends. You never know what you might find there.
Yeah, likewise, I'm more interested in the table games, but we'll always pay a visit to IGT and Williams as well to see what they're up to.
Yeah, I'm interested in that the major video poker manufacturers have been sold very recently. IGT has been sold. WMS has been sold. Bally's has been sold. And so I don't know how this is going to affect the games or not. It's going to be curious to find out. Certain ones of the head of the IGT video poker department has changed in the past few months. And so there's a whole new cast of characters there. Now, I have seen some of the games for IGT, for Action Gaming in private, and I can't really talk about them until the show. And so some of them are new and interesting. They're going to be different. So I'm actually looking forward to it and taking Bonnie along. She has never been to a gaming show before, and so I don't know how that's going to work out. Should be... I suspect she's going to be quite bored quite quickly.
Well, I think the gaming show is actually pretty fun. There's a lot of booths where they hire celebrities and pretty models and give away food and drink, magic shows. So everyone is trying to call you into their booth with some goodies. So I think it's pretty fun. I think she'll like it.
Yeah, I'm sure she's looking for all the pretty girl models. I'm sure that's really going to make her day. All right, Richard, we got less than a minute to go. Why don't you take us to the end?
All right. We really encourage your questions. You can find us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. Submit your questions there to us. You can get the show every week while you sleep. Just sign up at YouTube or iTunes or Stitcher or at richardmunchkin.com. You can find an archive of all the old shows at bobdancer.com. And that's it. So, Bob, why don't you finish this up?
Thank you, Michael Shackelford. Thank you, Richard Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.